Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you once more for tuning in to another episode of Marking Out with Mike. Happy Tuesday to you. And we are jumping in today with a raw recap. We're going to talk about everything that happened on the October 5th edition of Monday Night Raw. And as always, we're going to have news and notes and other information from things going around on the wrestling universe. So you would think if you do these podcasts as often as I do, that you'd run out of things in the news and the notes, but I am quickly learning that the wrestling landscape is always moving. It's fast moving, and when you jump online and you dig in, there's always something new to talk about. It takes me quite a while to go through Twitter and vet stories and see what's real, what's not, and so hopefully I'm a resource for you guys, and I'm a one-stop shop where you can just tune in, know that I've done all the hard work for you. You don't got to read through all the rumor websites and all the clickbait. Everything is right here. It's already been checked out, and it's authentic. But with that said, I do not claim to not make mistakes. So in a recent Marking Out with Mike last week, I mistakenly flip-flopped my information from the infamous ladder match at WrestleMania with Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon. We were talking, of course, about Clash of Champions and how the two title belts was kind of reminiscent of that. And I had said that Razor took his ball and went home. And it was, in fact, flip-flopped that it was Shawn Michaels who had left the company. And Razor Ramon stayed, and they had put the championship on him. So I think most people knew that. I just got it turned around in my head. But sorry for any confusion on that. And if you see any mistakes, point them out to me, and I will get them featured on the next show and correct, because I am not too proud. I don't claim to be a know-it-all. And that's why I have fun with the name. That's why it's called Marking Out with Mike, because I'm Mike, and I'm a Mark, and I don't try to be one of these smart Marks. I do consider myself someone who is well-educated in the art of professional wrestling, but I am just a fan. I'm not a talent. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be something I'm not. There's a ton of other podcasts where people try to have this almighty attitude, and I don't want to be one of those individuals for you guys. So we will go ahead, and we will jump into the news and the notes, and we will then, after that, dive in. Just general rule of thumb, it varies, it changes depending on how much information we have on any given day. But if you are listening to my podcast at any point and you look at the title and you see Raw Review, SmackDown Review, Impact, AEW, etc., and maybe you're not interested in one of those topics, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I try to keep the first half an hour to stories and opinions and discussions and news and notes. And then the second half hour is where I try to recap everything. So even if you are not a fan of those brands for whatever reason, maybe don't like the roster, maybe just don't like the company as a whole, I do try to put something for every wrestling fan at the beginning of our shows. I don't necessarily go in any particular order, so we might jump all over, do three AEW stories, then something with NXT. We might throw some Impact knowledge on you, and even some indie news and overseas wrestling like New Japan, things from Europe, etc. So always worth it, in my opinion. At least this is the intention, to listen to the first half an hour and really see what we're talking about, see what's out there, see if you can learn something new, or at the very least, just get a different opinion, because I do offer some of my viewpoints. I try to do it in a non-biased way. I try not to lean in favor of one company versus the other, and so you guys know. I've already said it. I'm not trying to be a hipster. I'm not trying to be elitist. I'm just trying to be honest with all of you. So with that said, we're going to start off with the news notes. Some information coming at you from the world of All Elite Wrestling. It's been announced that Big Swole is going to take on Serena Deeb this Wednesday. So Serena Deeb was just signed to AEW. And so this will be one of her first official matches. Big Swole is also going to be featured tonight on AEW Dark, which airs on YouTube at 7 p.m. Central. So you can check that out. Cool thing about that is you can watch it at any time. I haven't fully decided if I'm going to do reviews on Dark. I'm leaning mostly, probably 90% towards not doing them because there's already so much information that I'm trying to digest that's taking up all my time between all the other major shows. So I don't really think that it is relevant for me to do that because I do watch Dark and I do enjoy Dark, but as you already know, it's mostly a enhancement talent show, kind of a spot to keep guys from getting rusty, guys and gals. If anything ever interesting happens on there, any injury developments, any storyline advancement, anything like that, then we will bring it up on the news and notes of our various podcasts. But overall, it's not going to be something. Those shows vary so much. Sometimes there'll be 7 matches, sometimes there'll be 11, 12 matches, and it's just the up and coming guys like Griff Garrison and the others, guys like Joe Alonzo. It's not really big names, probably not anything that's ever going to have an impact on the Wednesday Night Dynamite show. So, again, probably not going to do that, but Big Swole is going to be in action on this tonight's edition of Dark, and then she's going to be in action again on Wednesday. Of course, it's filmed on the same night. Interestingly enough, I believe they're kind of double dipping with Brian Cage. If I'm not mistaken, he is doing back-to-back title defenses of that silly, god-awful FTW title. So he'll be taking on someone tonight on Dark. And then he's also taking on Will Hobbs for the FTR title, or the FTR title, the FTW title. So if you're interested in that, I like to try to claim Brian Cage because he's from Chico and I'm from Sacramento, and it's nice to see like people like Shotzi Blackheart, Bayley over on SmackDown, and some of these other NorCal talents like Timothy Thatcher from right here in Sacramento. It's nice to see them represented across the various brands. Overall, Brian Cage is not really my cup of tea because he is just a overly muscle bound kind of guy, and it doesn't seem natural. I don't know if he uses any sort of enhancements or anything like that, but he works pretty good. He's not like some of these other big guys that are all hulked out that are slow in the ring and only have a limited move set. So I always get excited, when he's on there because he's the pride and joy of Chico, which is a cool little college town in Northern California if you've never been. But I just wish they would. I love his placement with Taz. Team Taz is kind of neat, but the FTW title, it has no point. Like, if they even gave me a reason, like, okay, it's an unsanctioned title, but we've got a chip on our shoulder and we're claiming this title because we are the unofficial champion, kind of like what MJF is doing, where he calls himself the uncrowned champion of AEW. If it was something like that, it would make sense, but they're just like, no, you should be a champ, so here's a championship. And then AEW, for story purposes, says we don't recognize that as a title, and then it just sticks around. But they're not the only ones doing it. They're doing it in Impact with Moose, which Impact's going to be on tonight as well. And they're doing the funeral for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship, which will hopefully finally put that storyline to rest. It feels like it's been stretching on for a few months too long. But I'm just not a big fan of the titles that aren't real because it creates this illusion that, and maybe this is me thinking too realistically, you do sometimes have to suspend disbelief when you're a pro wrestling fan. You've got the Hurricane, he's a superhero. You got guys like that. So you have to be willing to use your imagination a little bit. But it's just like, imagine you go to work and you're wearing a shirt and your boss is like, oh, well, you're not allowed to wear that kind of shirt. It goes against our dress code. You have really one option, and it's to take that shirt off and wear something that's dress code, or you're probably going to get written up or fired. So the idea that people like Moose and people like Brian Cage can run around with these unofficial championships, and their job's just like, well, it's not recognized by us, but yeah, sure, we're gonna allow it. It just kind of creates this illusion that there's no control in the company. And I don't want to sound like I am taking a crud on AEW because if we're being honest, AEW is probably my favorite of the all the major wrestling companies right now. I do enjoy everything that everyone offers, but for some companies it's less. And with AEW, they're on my highest scale. You know, WWE has a lot of low points, but they get my attention with certain things that they do. There's certain things I like and certain things I don't. And AEW hits the mark more times than not. But between this and the fact that, like, the top five guys in the company are executive vice presidents and they're allowed to go and assault talent, like I talked about in the last AEW podcast, just kind of silly. It creates this thing that there's no control in the company. But it is pro wrestling, so it is what it is. And speaking of AEW and Wednesday's Dynamite, they have announced a pretty good plethora of matches and announcements and things. Of course, that's the one-year anniversary, so I do like that they kind of gave it this this really pay-per-view kind of feel. So some of the things that are already advertised, in addition to it being the one-year anniversary, it's also the 30th anniversary of Chris Jericho in professional wrestling. He and Jake Hager will be in action against the Chaos Project, which features Luther and his little masked buddy. So that should be interesting. It's obviously not going to be a good match. You have one team of the Inner Circle, which is great. Both guys are great proven talents. Then you have Luther, not really a big fan of. Kind of feel like he's a waste of a roster spot. You've got his weird little buddy. And so something further, I think, is going to happen with that. That's just there to move the needle. Something's going to happen. It's going to advance some sort of story. I imagine possibly Jericho's going to get embarrassed. Not necessarily by those two because they're kind of irrelevant talent. But something's going to happen. I don't know if they're still going to keep the thing with him and Orange going or if that's kind of done since Orange seems to have moved on to the Dark Order. But that might possibly create a little spot for somebody to beef. Maybe Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy seems to think that Chris Jericho hit him with the baseball bat. So there will probably be some storyline advancement in there. So we will have to kind of wait and see what happens with that. As I said before, Brian Cage is going to defend the FTR title against Will Hobbs. Don't know how you can defend a title in a company when the company doesn't recognize that title. But I'm not going to go on that rant again. And then FTR is taking on Hybrid 2 in a tag team title match. I'm not really the biggest fan of the Hybrid tag team either. I also don't understand how they are in a position to compete for the tag team titles. Almost any other team, the Nightmare, you know, QT and Dustin, should be ahead of them, the Best Friends. SCU just competed, so I guess they can't get another one. I would imagine almost any version of Dark Order would all be above Hybrid because those guys aren't featured on weekly television very much. They're almost exclusively a dark tag team. But AEW does recognize the victories that people pick up on Dark as recognized wins and losses, which I guess that makes sense. So maybe they have more title victory, or excuse me, more tag team victories over there that I'm not aware of. I kind of watch the rankings when they come out on Twitter every week, and I don't recall ever seeing Hybrid on there. But something happened, and they're in a good place to get a tag team title match. So we'll see what happens there. Obviously not expecting a tag team title change. And then the big match that everyone's going to be tuning in for is the dog collar match. We talked about it last week. You're going to see Mr. Brody Lee versus Cody. And as I kind of elaborated on in last week's episode, I'm really curious to see how much those guys are actually allowed to get away with. Because Cody loves to bleed. He loves to be gory and take those crazy spots and do the big bumps and everything. So I'll be curious to see what they let him do, if there's any like hanging spots or anything like that. I think that's going to be a great match. And overall, top to bottom, it's going to be a pretty good show. Switching out of the AEW focus, we're going to talk about WWE and the draft. So there's a rumor, not really a very well-vetted rumor, could just be fan theories. It's getting floated enough, though, and it's picked up traction. I am not confirming this by any means. I hope it doesn't even happen, if we're being honest, but there is a pretty solid rumor floating around that they believe that the Garganos may be called up to the main roster as part of the draft this week. So no idea if they would go to SmackDown, if they would go to Raw. I'm a Johnny Gargano fan. I like Candice LeRae. Ideal situation is they just stay on NXT and they do some stuff down there. If it's a must situation, I would prefer them on SmackDown. I don't know why, but that just seems like a better fit. I could see Candice having a good feud with someone like Bayley. I could see more interesting opportunities. Even her and Sasha Banks would be pretty good. I see them getting lost on Raw. I don't know. I would prefer they don't go up because NXT guys don't typically have the best success, but I kind of want to see in general the whole culture of NXT kind of change a little bit and shift the focus. I don't want people to keep thinking of it as a farm system like it was thought about for so long, because even though it very much still is, it's starting to be recognized as a third brand as they try to compete with AEW on Wednesdays. And if they're going to put guys like Finn Balor and others down there, I would like to see them just keep the Garganos, just don't call it a call-up, because it should be considered an equal brand on par with all these other ones. Like AEW doesn't call Dark, you know, their farm system, even though it pretty much is. So hopefully the Garganos will stay where they are, but eventually, you know, no one can sit down there forever. Otherwise, you have, I mean, as much as I love seeing it because I'm a Gargano fan, the guy is in some sort of title match or high stipulation match all the time. He's either in qualifying matches to try to be a number one contender, or he is a number one contender, or he's the champ. He just exited a feud for the heavyweight championship and then jumped into a feud for the North American title. So we'll have to see kind of what happens there. Draft does start on SmackDown. They've been hyping it up. I talk about it later in the review, and I'll say it again here. There were about 22 commercials, it felt like, for the draft last night on Raw. They even did like their own in-show commercials a few times where they'd set up, somebody would walk out to the ring for a match, they'd cut to some random backstage thing, they'd show a commercial for the draft, and then they would cut back to the match, and then the match would happen. Then they'd cut to a real commercial, and you'd see a bunch of commercials for Gold Bond and Grey Poupon and all that stuff, and then you'd see a WWE commercial for the draft. And it's like, guys, we get it. It doesn't matter how long or how many times you tell us about it, the draft is not going to do anything. The rumor is that there's really no big plans for the draft. There's no real direction, and there's no brand supremacy. They kept playing that little quote by Corey Graves where he talks about brand supremacy and all that. There is no brand supremacy because there's no difference between the two brands. You got the WWE title, the Universal title. You got each division has their secondary title. Each show has their women's title. Each show has their tag title. There's absolutely nothing about it that creates any sort of desire to want to be on one brand or the other. And I talked about it recently where I think they could do things like, well, maybe this brand paid me more. This brand gave me title stipulations or some sort of incentive that made sense from a storytelling perspective. And I think sometimes WWE forgets that that's essentially what they are. I put them more, even though they are great athletes, I put them more in the line of like the Marvel universe in the sense that they are characters and they are like a movie versus putting them in a league with like basketball players and football players. They have to remember kind of where they fall on the spectrum and tell good stories. You know, let the athleticism do its part, but tell good stories and tell stories that make sense and don't leave loose ends. Like, try your very best. I know that they're on social media and I know that there's a lot of armchair bookers, and maybe I'm being one myself right now, but they should to a degree, pay attention to the chatter on like social media, on Twitter especially, and just kind of see like what are fans complaining about. And fans will never be happy. You could give them 5-star matches. The Rock could come back. CM Punk would come back. Could come back. You know, you could get all these great guys to come back, and they'd get that initial pop, and then someone would be like, "Oh, why would you bring CM Punk back just to put him in a match with this person? We already saw that match before he left." And it's like, well, this is what you guys wanted, and now you're complaining again. But it would be interesting if they kind of kept their finger on the pulse of things, and they were like, "Oh, fans complain that the storyline we were doing with so-and-so just kind of went away." And then they could at the very least just like tie it up. Like, I don't know how you document everything and you forget what you were doing. Like, it's on television, it's on the network, it's on YouTube, it's on social media. And sometimes I feel like they're telling a story and then they're like, "What were we talking about? It doesn't matter. Make Kevin Owens do this now." So we'll see. But yeah, Gargano's possibly getting called up. Wrestling unions have been the big talk. Of course, WWE is telling the talent that at some point this month they're going to have to give up use of like their social medias and I think their Twitch accounts and their Cameo accounts, which I don't know at that point, is WWE getting a cut? If I pay you to do a Cameo for me, is WWE have to approve it? I imagine they do. You know, if I'm trying to promote my independent wrestling organization and I tell Alexa Bliss to cut me a Cameo telling people to go to this indie fed in California on Saturday night, Vince McMahon's going to shut something like that down, right? Even though, excuse me, even though it doesn't affect him in any way, I can't imagine that he's going to let his talent do stuff like that. And then even if it's just G-rated stuff, like, "I want you to wish my grandma a happy birthday," or "tell my boyfriend happy anniversary," things like that. Like, does WWE get a cut? So if I pay you $120 to do that, is Alexa Bliss get her piece and then Vince gets his piece? And how do they decide what's fair? Because it's her doing all the work, but it's them that builds up the popularity, is what they can be argued. So I don't know. I think if I was in a position like that, I might just disable those accounts. And then if I was no longer under the WWE brand, then maybe pop them back up. But there's a lot of conversation that can be had on both sides of the aisle, because I know in traditional unions, you have to pay your union dues. I guess wrestlers would be willing to do that. But at what point does it become worth it? Because if Vince McMahon's telling you you have to pay him a cut of your Cameo, and then you get to keep your Cameo because you're part of a potential union, and now you're paying that union, I don't know. I guess the argument is that you'd probably pay less in union dues than what you would pay to Vince for the cut, because at that point you're then keeping more of the money that you're generating third party from individual bookings. I think as a fan that he should let them do whatever they want, because yes, he may have created their character in some cases, and he may have gave them the platform to kind of put that character out there, but it really is a 50-50 road. Like, those talents come out. If it was all Vince and he was going to get the credit for it, then every single superstar that's ever come through the WWE system would be a megastar. But there are people along the way that fail through no fault of their own, because some gimmicks are just bad ideas. So I think that the stars should be given a bit more credit, but I think the conversation about unions is a very interesting one to be had. And if I could ever get some talent on, that would be a nice, you could do the whole podcast about something like that. But ultimately, I don't think it'll ever happen. I don't think you can ever organize guys and gals enough, because you're going to have your inner politicking even among the boys and girls in the back, and a union has to be pretty united, and there has to be a bigger issue. Like, WWE should probably offer them health benefits, should probably let them run their own third party platforms. But as a subjective, rational person, I think if you are actually able to think about both sides, you can kind of see where everybody's coming from. So even if Vince lets them do whatever they want and lets them do these cameos and lets them go on Twitch and things like that. We saw it with the NASCAR guy. He was doing the virtual thing. It was supposed to be just for the fans. For some reason, I think he thought his microphone was muted. I'm not a big NASCAR guy, but you guys probably know the story I'm talking about. And he ended up dropping the N-word on screen, and everyone heard him, and it was a bad look. And I don't ultimately know what came of it. I think he got suspended. But that's what you have to think about. If these guys are on there, and you got somebody like Paige who's going by her real name now on Twitter, and she says something sideways, just using her as an example, and people see, well, her Twitter handle is Real Paige WWE. And then it reflects on the company, and it makes the company look like things. And we've seen them distance themselves when the guys were getting accused of sexual like misconduct. They were released from the company. And it makes sense that you would want to make sure that you can kind of control your brand. Like, I know different companies I've worked for in the past have had policies where you can't talk about the company on social media. And it's not because anything's a secret or you're hiding anything. You just don't want to open the door for somebody to potentially get intoxicated on their day off and they say something. They don't think it's a big deal, and then it turns out to be a bigger hullabaloo than it really probably should have been. So you could, you know, go back and forth and kind of talk about that. You look at the big guys, and when you think about health benefits and you think about like the Seth Rollins type characters who've made big money, you think, well, maybe they don't need health insurance because they've got good money and they can more or less go get it themselves like a lot of other Americans. And that makes sense. But what about these guys who are coming up? They're going through the system. They're new. They're unproven. Fans haven't taken to them yet. And maybe in a few years, they're going to be a good star. But they're proving themselves. What happens if you break your leg or any of the catastrophic, very realistic things that could potentially happen in a very physical sport like pro wrestling? You know, do you walk away? Do you have to pay that out of your money? Like, what happens if you don't have the money? WWE's not going to help you and foot the bill. I wouldn't think so, at least. But you could talk about it. It'd be cool to maybe have somebody who's a union expert come on and discuss it more in potential, because my parents are in unions with their jobs, but I don't really know the nitty-gritty details. So it would be cool to kind of divulge into that. But one thing I think about is when you watch like the NBA and baseball, the players' associations have people who are like presidents, like the leader of the association. And it kind of is a fun idea to speculate, well, if WWE was to get one, who would be the president? Because it has to be somebody who can be relatable. So it has to be a current or a former talent. I think Jesse the Body Ventura is somebody who comes to mind with his political background and his wrestling background. I think he could be somebody who could kind of speak for them. I don't think he would be interested in something like that if it ever somehow happened. But yeah, if you guys have anything and you have ideas or thoughts, sound off. Reach out to me on Twitter and let me know what you think. My Twitter handle is Mike S. Flanagan. You can find all my takes on wrestling. A little bit of Walking Dead's on there as well. But that's a whole thing that could be interesting. Another chapter of that you could go down is, does each organization have to have their own union? I would think so. You know, you see in real life, you have like the bakers and confectionery union. And so that's all people who are kind of within that wheelhouse can kind of bundle together, even if they're part of different companies. But there's no way you could have a union that could oversee things like Impact, AEW, and WWE. They'd have to have their own independent ones. And then it also makes you think, at what point on the indies do you have a union? Because some guys are so far down the totem pole when you first get started and you're wrestling in armories and you're unproven and you're just fighting for free because you're just trying to get exposure and get experience and things like that. There's no way you could really ever try to unionize something that small, because injuries happen all the time, and sometimes it's the person's fault. because they are green. They don't know what they're doing in a wrestling ring yet. Maybe they weren't properly trained. And they put themselves in these dangerous positions. So I'd like to see it. I'd like to see something that helps them, at the very least, just from a health perspective, because I think a union could really help with the addition of things like healthcare. And as someone who suffered through most of his adult life, where I either make just a little too much money and the monthly healthcare premiums are crazy expensive, or I don't make enough money. It just seems like the system has always kind of got you in a position where you're never in the right place. So heart goes out to those guys. Hopefully something gets figured out. I don't think a union is the answer, but hopefully they're able to some degree, control what they do outside of the business. Even if it's something like maybe can put in their contract, Vince could solicit new talent and say, hey, you're not allowed to have these things, and if you do, we run them. And if that talent signs the contract, then boom, you're stuck, you agreed to it. But then maybe bigger, more proven talent, people with more clout, people with more leverage backstage, could say, no, Vince, you know, I've been wrestling for you for this long, I make you this much money, I sell all this merch, you're not getting control of my Cameo account. So we'll leave that one alone. I did post the question on Twitter, though, if you're on Twitter, about who you'd like to see as a possible union president if something like that was ever able to happen. So if you have opinions, go in there and chime in on that and see kind of what you think. So Eric from, was it Eric or, I think it was one of the Viking Raiders. I feel bad. I'm pretty sure it was Eric. Underwent surgery today, so he's going to be out of action. So if you don't see the Viking Raiders on TV for a while, that's probably why. I don't imagine that the other partner is going to do any sort of singles push. So the Viking Raiders are probably off television for the foreseeable future. They're not being punished. They're not being buried. They are just, one of them is out of action, rehabbing from a shoulder surgery. I did pose a question about whether or not we should have a physical Hall of Fame. I'll probably gloss over that and get back to that because we are over the half hour mark and I do want to kind of get through this and get into the Raw review since it is a 3-hour show, so there is a lot to cover. But essentially, yays and nays on a physical Hall of Fame. A lot of people don't recognize it as a quote-unquote real Hall of Fame, but I think that it is widely recognized by it's the most exposed because it has the WWE name backing it, so casual fans know about it, and the people who are more than likely to pay money and go to a Hall of Fame are the same people who go to like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the NFL Hall of Fame, and I believe there is a Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Nebraska. I could be mistaken about that, but I do know that there is a real Hall of Fame. But you never really hear anybody talk about it. I'd never see pictures in a day and age where everything's online. I mean, I know it's out there. You could seek it. It has a website, all that stuff. I've looked at it and thought about going. But it's more for your nitty-gritty, diehard, old-school fans who want to see things immortalized from, like, the territory days and NWA and things like that. And from a money-making business standpoint, I think that the WWE Hall of Fame could be successful because even though people are going to argue that there's girls like the Bellas that are in there that maybe shouldn't be, you're going to get fans, the same types of people who pay a lot of money to go to WrestleMania, a lot of money to go to Access, are going to pay to go to a place like this. So do you put it in Stanford where the company is headquartered? Do you put it down in Orlando because there's already a lot of tourism there? And when COVID's not going on, that's where Full Sail is. That's where NXT is. I think Orlando makes the most sense. I can't really make a case for pretty much anywhere except for Stanford or Orlando. And who's going on vacation to Stanford? You know, nobody's going to do that. Orlando makes the most sense. It's a destination. You could book a whole thing around it. I'd go. If they built a Hall of Fame, I would definitely go. You could see pictures. Maybe every once in a while they could do meet and greets where there's former talent there. Just like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they could have ring-worn gear, things like that in there. So we could continue on that topic, and maybe we will at another time, but we're going to keep it there. Wade Barrett was interviewed, and he discussed how he is mostly unofficially done with in-ring time because he says he's 40, but 40 is still pretty young in professional wrestling. He does say, though, that an opportunity to feud and work with Drew McIntyre, especially for the WWE title, is something that he could possibly see himself returning and considering returning for if the terms of the contract are right. He mentions how he does feel like he was able to do a good amount in his career. And if you look at his time in both WWE and outside of WWE, he has built a pretty decent body of work. So maybe we'll see that. You got a lot of guys like Jericho that are still wrestling at 49. So Wade Barrett seems to be in great shape, even though he has not wrestled since 2016. I think he could definitely get back in ring shape and go on another run if he himself wanted to. So Bobby Roode returned last week, and then he was in the main event tonight. And a lot of people were wondering where he is. And every time we don't know something, the first thing as fans that we like to do, especially when it's WWE, is talk about how this person was being buried. The quick answer to where the hell Bobby Roode's been, he's been at home. He's been in Canada. He wasn't able to get into the U.S. easily as often as he needed to because he wanted to stay home, go down to Orlando, go home, go down to Orlando once a week. That's what a lot of these people are doing. You've got Beth Phoenix doing commentary from home. People want to be around their families. There's no house shows. There's no additional circuit outside of television. So these guys don't want to be on the road unnecessary amounts of time. And because of the travel restrictions and how strict Canada is about not wanting us dirty COVID-infested Americans in their country, he wasn't able to get back and forth very easily. So he's back now. I don't know if that means he's staying stateside for a bit or if he got some sort of exemption, but he's back now. And hopefully it turns into a good little run for him. Arn Anderson was talking on his podcast, and just some quick notes from that. He mentions that the general manager storyline, the anonymous GM from 2010, he says he hated that storyline and that ultimately they had no end game. People were just out of ideas and they were figuring it out on the fly. It, of course, turned out to later be revealed that it was Hornswoggle, which was super silly and could have been done better. But yeah, that's why that came off so sloppy, because there was no end game. He also talks about the Hell in a Cell gimmick being overexposed. Possibly as we get closer to that pay-per-view, I will talk about that a little bit more. And then Ali had a big night. So we're going to jump into into everything that has to do with Retribution and everything that happened on Raw, and then we'll get back to Ali. So the show opens. Monday Night Raw. Spoilers ahead, guys. Do not listen to this any further if you have not seen Monday Night Raw. And if you do not want spoilers, I proceed here on out. I'm going to announce who won, some of the high spots from the match. Don't continue if you don't want to know. So the show does open. Randy Orton is in a room. We come to find out that it's the same room where he assaulted all of the legends like Christian, Big Show, Ric Flair, and I believe Shawn Michaels. So he recalls everything from Clash of Champions, what they did to him, and he explains that's why he did that to them. He goes on for quite a while, and then eventually Drew McIntyre comes into the ring. The two of them fight. It's pretty quickly broken up by the referees, and Randy Orton is able to escape the room. Drew McIntyre's looking all pissed, and then they cut. So the next segment on the show was a six-woman's tag team match. Zelina Vega, coming back from the break, was already in the ring. She didn't get a televised entrance. And then her partners came out. It was Lana and Natalya. Their opponents was the new team of Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose, which has been kind of neat. Maybe they'll go for the tag titles eventually. And then Asuka kind of rounded out their trio. They little back and forth, just gave a little shine mostly to the team face, and the good girls win. They end up beating, and they get declared the victory. So all the faces leave, and Lana and Natalya are still in the ring, and Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax start coming down the ramp. They each exit to a different side of the ring. Lana and Natalya realize that they are trapped, and then a little scuffle ensues. Nia Jax puts up Natalya, and she tries to pummel her and put her through the announcer's desk. Lana saves her, which was actually kind of cool. Made sense that she would save her partner. And then there's another scuffle, and she ends up getting Samoan dropped through the announcer's table for like the third week in a row. So I don't know if they're squishing both literally and figuratively, if they're trying to squash Lana because of her husband being in AEW now. Kind of silly. Lana's not exactly a great talent, so it's not like she's being denied this incredible run by any means. And that's not an insult. She contributes to the show, but she's not a great in-ring performer. So if this gets heat for Nia Jax and stuff, then I guess it is what it is. Lana's kind of already a heel, though, so a heel-on-heel attack, although it was the theme of Raw, doesn't seem to buy much additional heat for Nia Jax, who fans love to hate. So then backstage, you see R-Truth. It's a pretty funny segment. He's got a draft board, and he's got some names on there. He's got Mercy the Buzzard. He's got one of Tozawa's ninjas listed. And then he's got little Jimmy going third in the draft overall. So there's a janitor behind him cleaning up, and then a referee comes from off-frame. R-Truth is immediately concerned by this. He says, "What? Why are you here?" And then he turns around in time to see the janitor, who is waving a mop, and R-Truth ducks. The mop appears to hit the ref, which I don't think was supposed to happen because there was no typical WWE ref bump. And so R-Truth goes to run, but he slips on the wet floor that was being mopped, which was a nice touch. And then the janitor pins him, 1, 2, 3. The janitor takes off his disguise to reveal himself to be none other than Drew Gulak, who R-Truth calls Randy Orton over and over. And that kind of ends that scene, and then he runs away. Drew Gulak is the new 24/7 champion. Then we cut to another backstage segment. MVP and the Hurt Business are talking to Mustafa Ali, Apollo Crews, and Ricochet. And MVP says that, well, the draft is coming up and they may break up soon. He wants to offer them an opportunity, a one-night chance only, to join the Hurt Business. They say, why would we join it? We've said no to you multiple times. He says, go ahead, just think about it. He talks about how Cedric had declined them many, many times, and then he finally got it and went on to have longevity and success with the Hurt Business. So he leaves, and then they kind of have a little tease where it seems like Ricochet's thinking about it, and he might be considering the offer. After that, we go back to the ring, and we have the Monday Night Messiah, and Murphy is with him. And then there's a recap for everything that's going along with the love story, or the teased implied love story that may be budding between Aaliyah and Murphy. And then Murphy isn't handing the microphone to Seth, and he's like, hey man, we're going to talk about this, give me the microphone. And then Murphy says, no, I'm not going to do it until you apologize. Seth is flustered by that. He's like, why would I apologize to her? I didn't do anything wrong. I'm the Messiah. And then he reminds Murphy, I'm the Messiah, you're the disciple. I'm the Messiah, you're the disciple. I'm the Messiah, you're the disciple. And he progresses with it, and he continues to get more and more angry, and he starts kind of yelling at him and tells them that they need to focus. And so out next is Humberto Carrillo and Dominic Mysterio. And so we have the tag match. It's going to be Murphy and Seth versus those two. So Murphy ends up picking up the win for his team after catching a really cool-looking knee. Humberto goes up to the top rope and does a dive. And as he's coming down, Murphy times it perfectly and is able to get him with a running knee strike. Basically KOs him, covers him, 1, 2, 3. There was another really cool spot where Murphy and Seth were outside the ring, and Dominic goes up to the top rope, and he dives out and jumps onto Seth, and at the very same time, Humberto came under him as a suicide dive between the ropes. So you can visually paint yourself a picture. You got Dominic going over the top and Humberto going through the middle underneath him. He dives on Murphy. Dominic lands on Seth, and so that was a cool spot as well. But ultimately, Murphy stands on his own and is able to pick up the victory for the team, and the dissension is kind of teased. And then Murphy ends up leaving, and he leaves Seth Rollins all alone at ringside. He doesn't stop and celebrate with them, and then he leaves. So then backstage, we see Adam Pearce, one of WWE's producers. He is on the cell phone, and Braun Strowman interrupts him, and he says that he's demanding a match. And Pearce goes on to tell him that he can't give him a match because Strowman is not a official Raw superstar, but he could be after the draft. And that's kind of how they kept going. They kept reminding us, you don't live here, but you could after the draft. Oh, by the way, the draft's coming up. Hey, did anybody tell you that there's a draft? They really hammered it home. They're really trying super hard to make fans care. Strowman says he doesn't care. He wants to fight. He just needs somebody to get these hands. Grr, 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 grr. And so Pierce says that he can't give him a sanctioned match, but he can give him an exhibition match, which is just WWE talk for non-sanctioned fight. So Strowman says, cool, make it happen. Strowman leaves, and as soon as Strowman's off camera, Mr. Keith Lee comes onto the camera, and you have your match. And so your next segment after that, Kevin Owens goes out to the ring. He's doing a KO show. His guest is going to be none other than Bray Wyatt. He wants to talk about what happened with his encounter on the Fiend on SmackDown. So Bray Wyatt's the guest. We go to a commercial break, and then when we return from the commercial, which featured an ad for the WWE draft, we see Seth and Murphy. They're backstage, and they're essentially telling each one to apologize. Murphy wants him to apologize to Aaliyah for putting her on blast and showing all her private DMs. And Seth wants an apology from Murphy for basically leaving him and behaving the way that he has. They give each other an ultimatum, and they say that they have until 10 p.m. Eastern to give each other the apology. So they cut from that. We return. Kevin Owens is in the ring. He talks about how he feels different about tonight's show. He says that people are right. Once you're touched by the Fiend, you do feel different. He describes the mandible claw that was put on him as like choking the breath away from you. And just talks about how that show is not going to be the same as past Kevin Owens shows. So he takes the chairs and throws them out of the ring. He throws the stand out of the ring. And he says that, and then he calls Bray Wyatt out. So the Firefly Funhouse music hits, and Bray Wyatt appears on the Tron and doesn't actually come out. Probably because he's a SmackDown superstar, and he knows he's not supposed to be on Raw. And because he's loyal to his SmackDown, because he wants brand supremacy, as Corey Graves reminds us, he probably wanted to be loyal and stay on SmackDown. But that could all possibly change on the draft. I hope that was annoying. It was meant to be annoying, because that's how I felt watching all those ads for the draft over and over and over again. So Bray appears, and he's, like I said, he's at the Firefly Funhouse, and he says that he has no problem with Kevin Owens and that Kevin Owens is his friend, and that he even wrote him a song about friendship, which I was kind of excited for that segment, but it didn't suck. I just thought it was going to be funny. Because I really like Bray Wyatt and what he's doing with this character. And I thought they were going to be able to turn it into an interesting little segment, but they weren't. It didn't suck. Like I said, it was kind of just indifferent. I was like, ooh, this could potentially be gold and be one of those moments everyone talks about. And it just kind of fell flat. But it got the job done. It was supposed to be kind of an idiotic, like, what's this psychopath singing about kind of moment. And so it worked in that sense. So he sings a little song, and there's even sing-along lyrics on the screen for people at home. And Bray's like, you know, Kevin, why aren't you singing? And Bray says, Kevin Owens says, we're not friends, and I want to fight you. And Wyatt says, I don't like bullies, and neither does he, referencing the Fiend. So the tone gets more serious at that point. And Bray Wyatt says that Friday night on SmackDown, Kevin will know. So teases an appearance of the Fiend on SmackDown. So then it cuts away. Bray's gone. Kevin is still in the ring. And Owen says, well, if you're not going to come to me, I'm going to go to you. So he gets out of the thing. He starts walking up the ramp. And about halfway off the ramp, Aleister Black attacks him from behind, hits him with the black mass. He KOs, does the Indian sit down thing, sits in front of him, and that ends the segment. So not done with the Aleister Black stuff. It doesn't look like. I don't know exactly how they're going to tie it in with everything. I doubt that he's going to be teaming with the Fiend. I really hope not. But if they can kind of keep him separate and still one in the same, sort of like Kevin Owens is being attacked by all these tortured souls, then that could be kind of interesting. So Drew's backstage for a riveting interview, and he just makes a bunch of noise and essentially says yes to Randy Orton's challenge, where Randy Orton has said, I want to fight you in a Hell in a Cell match for the WWE Championship. He cuts kind of your standard Hell in a Cell style promo where he says, I'm not going to just take you for a fight. I'm going to take you to hell. He says that usually when you're locked in the cell, you're locked in there together. But he says that he's not locked in the ring with Orton. Orton will be locked in the ring with him. Pretty much the same segment that we've heard for past Hell in a Cells. But it should be a pretty good match. Even though overexposure is kind of killing the Hell in a Cell gimmick, it should still be a good match between these two. I believe that Sasha Banks and Bayley will probably be in one as well. Well, potentially, because you can't have three Hell in a Cell matches, and it's starting to make it seem like maybe Roman Reigns and Jey Uso aren't going to be in a Hell in a Cell match, because you can't have two SmackDown feuds. So we'll see what happens there, because I could see either of those matches being Hell in a Cell. So then we have the Keith Lee-Strowman fight. Pretty immediately, the action spills to the outside of the ring, and Tom Phillips is like, oh, this isn't going to count towards anyone's official records here in WWE. And Samoa Joe cuts him off and is like, oh, well, that's not going to matter because these men just want to hurt each other. And it was really silly because nobody in pro wrestling outside of AEW even talks about winning losses. There's no way to look it up. There's absolutely no credibility to it. I know that there's some really dedicated Twitter sites that do actually keep stats on wins and losses for WWE superstars. And that's kind of neat. It's kind of interesting. It's a lot of work. But even in AEW, where they do monitor it, it doesn't ever have any sort of purpose. Like, it doesn't seem like it's ever going anywhere. But it is what it is, and they brought it up. So they're outside. They're fighting. Strowman goes for the little running choo-choo train move that he does, and it's blocked. He ends up, like, kind of knocking him onto the announce table. They end up getting counted out, and the referee's like, you both lose this match that didn't count to begin with. Strowman's really mad at the referee for counting him out in a match that didn't matter. It's just a lot of emphasis on losing the match, even though it didn't matter. So then he brawls. He ends up doing the choo-choo train running shoulder block again. Keith Lee goes through the barricade. The whole barricade fell, not just like we've seen in the past where like the two parts break away, but like a whole segment of that entire side fell, which the idea that Braun Strowman, even as big as he is, could shoulder block someone through something like that and the whole thing would just fall over is silly, because we've seen for years where like Rob Van Dam would do the Daminator onto it and it wouldn't fall over. So it's really silly that we're supposed to believe it's that fragile and he's that strong. So Strowman leaves. Ha ha ha, I'm the biggest guy in the fight. I'm here on Raw for no reason and I beat up Keith Lee. Keith Lee gets up pretty fast and then Strowman's like, oh no, what are you doing? I'm supposed to look tough. So he goes back down to fight him. Keith Lee kind of runs and jumps off the steel steps and they fight some more. They go up the ramp and he throws Braun Strowman into the LED board and then it's like, ooh, maybe Keith Lee's going to get the last lap. But then Braun Strowman picks him up and they tackle each other and they fall into like some tables and stuff. It's like a 3-foot drop off the side of the stage and they're both dead and we're all so panicked and have supposed to worry about what's going to happen in the future. So then we see our boy, Mr. 24/7 champion, Mr. Drew Gulak. He's backstage. He's trying to hide with the belt and he gets spooked because he sees Mr. R-Truth. He turns to run away and he bumps into a trash can and he falls over the top. And while he's laying there, Akira Tozawa, who is not dead and was not eaten by a shark, kind of crawls out and they look at each other And then he runs to get away, but he runs right at R-Truth. R-Truth back body drops him into like this rolling dumpster thing. R-Truth gets in, they're fighting. Tozawa slides out of his garbage bin and jumps into the other garbage bin. And then they're fighting and you can't see anything because the camera angle's low. And then there's a 1-2-3 and we're all supposed to wonder who exactly became champion. And surprise, R-Truth became the champion. For the 42nd time in his career, R-Truth is the 24/7 champion. And that's the number they mentioned. I think he was right around 41, so I believe that is accurate. Then we go to the ring. Shelton Benjamin and Lashley are ready for a tag team match. And the tag team match is going to be them versus Apollo Crews and not Ollie, Ricochet. So before Ricochet's like, oh, maybe I'm going to join her business. Just kidding. Tricked you. And so everybody's tricked and feels tricked. And then Shelton Benjamin does apply a really good looking armbar in the match. Lashley tries to spear for the win. Apollo Crews jumps over him. And it looks like he's going to be able to kind of keep the match going. But he ends up getting caught in the master lock or the hurt lock, as they call it. And he taps out and the bad guys win. Then we go backstage. Murphy is waiting. There's just 12 minutes to go before 10 Eastern, and he is supposed to get his apology from Seth or issue an apology. Aaliyah's back there, and they talk, and she's like, you're not really considering apologizing to him, are you? And then he's like, oh, I don't know. So then we get some more draft reminders, and then Hurt Business is approached backstage. Ali says, hey, why don't you guys meet me out in the ring later tonight? So MVP says, okay, I'll fight you in a match later tonight. Then we get Seth and Murphy in the ring. They ask each other to apologize. And Murphy actually came out to his own music here because, you know, they're doing the dissension. Seth eventually gives Murphy the opportunity to apologize. He instead decides, hey, instead of telling you I'm sorry, I'm just going to beat the shit out of you. So he goes outside and he gets a kendo stick and he swings on Murphy. And they're kind of fighting. Rollins gets the kendo stick is what I meant to say. And he swings on Murphy. He misses. So then Buddy Murphy gets it. He starts just throwing in on Seth Rollins and tearing his ass up with the kendo stick. Finally, Seth is like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And he's just yelling. He's not saying it into a mic, but he's really loud. Mm-hmm. He apologizes to Aaliyah. He says he didn't mean to bring her into it. And then Murphy kind of lets his guard down. And then he drops the kendo stick. And the Monday Night Messiah grabs it and beats the shit out of him. And then the stick breaks and he goes out of the ring and he grabs a chair. By the time he comes back in the ring with the chair, Aaliyah is already in there and she's pleading him off, begging him off, saying, don't do this, don't do this. And then Ray and his wife and the whole family eventually come out and they force Aaliyah to leave Buddy Murphy beaten in a heap of himself alone in the ring. And as you hear them leaving, they're talking about what Murphy helped do to Ray's eye and how Aaliyah shouldn't be considering him. And it was a pretty good segment. So then they leave. Then we got the women's tag champs, and it's the Riot Squad versus the Heels. Some really vicious arm bars and stuff onto Ruby Riott. The Riott Squad would fall short in this. They did this interesting little piggyback move where Liv Morgan gets on Ruby Riott's back and then she like Samoan drops her into her opponent. But yeah, so Ruby gets her shoulder decimated. They mentioned past problems she's had with it. Eventually, the heels bond over how much they love hurting people, and then Baszler chokes out Ruby Riott to retain the titles. The Hurt Business come back out for the next segment. MVP is in the ring and he's getting ready to fight Mustafa Ali. Ali comes out and fast forward, Retribution comes out and it is revealed that Ali is in fact, as WWE confirmed on their Twitter account, the leader of Retribution. So I'm very curious to see if they tie that into his hacker thing to tie up a loose end. We'll talk about it a little bit more since we are kind of winding down on this show and on a future podcast. We will probably tomorrow in the news and notes section before I release my Impact review episode. So that was where the show probably should have ended. But then they did the main event. It was Orton, Ziggler, and Rude and the Street Profits and Drew McIntyre. It was really awesome to see, you know, Bobby Roode do his really cool, glorious entrance. And then Montez Ford hits that really awesome frog splash. But the match ended up ending with Randy Orton actually getting the pinfall victory over Drew McIntyre. So that'll set up for their feud going forward. But this has been another bell-to-bell, action-packed episode. A lot of content. I want to thank you guys for listening. If you enjoy what you hear, definitely share it. And until next time, I'm tapping out.